Welcome and breathe in air. Abstract Illusions Radio, the show that explores and exposes the many aspects of expression, with your host, Jennifer Hellman.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you so much for listening tonight to air. I'm your host, Jennifer Hellman, intuitive life coach, psychic, and writer, and I was guided to an amazing, insightful book called A Swan in Heaven, about a mother's connection with her very special messenger son, Danny. Now, Terry Daniels began to use telepathic communication with her son after he became ill and wasn't able to speak. Together, they have written an amazing book that was so moving that when I finished it, I had to call Terry and thank her so much for writing the book. It just was very, very inspiring, very empowering, and I just loved it so much. I am so glad to have her and Danny on. I'm sure he's around. Now, they have a website that you can order this wonderful book, and it's swaninheaven.com, and it's lots of wonderful information there as well. Terry, welcome, and Danny as well. Welcome to air. Thank you so much for being on tonight.
Thank you so much. We're very happy to be here.
Now, why don't you give a brief history about Danny?
Well, okay, Danny was my son, and he was a perfectly normal child until he was about 7 or 8 years old, and he started to show some very strange symptoms that took 2 years to diagnose. But it turns out that he had a very rare metabolic disorder called metachromatic leukodystrophy, which no doctors have ever heard of. And I was told when he was 10 that he would live about 10 years at most, and he would lose all his physical abilities in the process. And that's exactly what happened. He eventually stopped talking, walking. He lost the ability to lose his hands, to use his hands or to do anything with his body.
Mm-hmm.
But around the time when he was losing the ability to speak, I was doing tarot readings at a metaphysical bookstore. I had always been somewhat intuitive, but I never thought of myself as an intuitive. But around the time when he stopped talking, my intuitive abilities really increased, and I started channeling through these tarot readings I was doing. And I began to increase my ability to hear as he lost his ability to speak. So we were kind of getting set up for the, what I call an interdimensional relationship that we now have. And he died probably 3 years after that and started speaking to me about 30 minutes after he died.
So, it's just, there's so much to cover here. What was the first thing that you realized, I mean, how was it that you could, what was your reaction when you realized you could hear your son, but yet he wasn't physically speaking?
Well, you know, it's funny because today, over the years, I had a lot of readings with intuitives, mediums, mm-hmm. and psychics, and just today, one of these psychics who I've worked with for years, she's writing a book, and she asked me to look through some of my old readings that I'd had with her to find some material for her book, and I found something from 3.5 years ago, where it said I had asked them to contact my son and because he couldn't talk at the time, and I asked, you know, what would he say to me if he could talk? And I just found this today, and he said, don't worry about my transition. I came to Earth in this form as a disabled child specifically to fulfill a soul contract that we have, that we would be teachers about the journey of the soul together. And you will not believe how easily and how quickly we will be talking to each other again after I make my transition. And this was 3 years before he died. And I just found this today. After he died, about 30 minutes later, I was lying on the bed holding his body in my arms, and I said, okay, show me where you are. Where are you right now? And he showed me a picture of himself. And it was a silly, comical picture that made me laugh. He appeared to be about 20 years old, and he was standing in shallow water, walking around, kicking his legs, wearing blue jeans with rolled-up cuffs and a T-shirt with rolled up sleeves, and he looked like James Dean from Rebel Without a Cause. So he immediately started making me laugh right off the bat. And that's how it started. And it was so constant and easy from that moment on.
Now, did it frighten you at first, or not so because you were intuitive?
It didn't frighten me at all. I expected it because I'd had so much indication from, you know, readings and
right.
from my own knowledge. And I had always, well, I should say always, but since I was a teenager, I was metaphysically minded.
Right.
So I really expected this. And what I teach people now is that you should expect this.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing unusual or special or magic about this at all.
Yeah, in fact, I was talking to a friend, and I had been talking to her dogs because I do animal communication quite a bit. And she looked at me, and she goes, oh, I wish you could do this. And I go, you can.
Exactly.
And she goes, huh? And it is really not as difficult. We really get in our own way in communicating with the other side.
With not only with the other side, but with souls on this side. I mean,
right.
we communicate with things living or dead because there is not really any death.
That's true.
And, you know, we've been taught in our religious indoctrination that only certain people, prophets or priests or, you know, very high beings like Jesus or angels can do this, but it really isn't true. At the very core and the very root of all true spiritual teaching is the ability to communicate between worlds.
And it's, now, since you have this very special connection with Danny, and he does give you messages, does he ever give you a message that surprises you? I mean, really kind of makes you go, I had no idea.
Probably not anything that totally surprises me, but he will give me messages about something that I'm struggling with and I can't find my way through it.
Mm-hmm.
And he will explain to me, oh, well, the reason you're struggling with this is because you have to work on this particular thing or that thing.
Right.
Or your relationship with that person was about this. And as soon as I see him say it, it makes perfect sense. It resonates so true that it's like, oh, yeah, of course. My soul must have known that all along. He's taught me so much about soul contracts and pre-birth agreements
mm-hmm.
that really once you start to look at everything that way, no information you get can ever really be surprising because your soul already knows it.
Well, all the answers are lie within, right?
We already know. I have a little sticker on my refrigerator that says, you already know.
Now, back to the soul contract, so that before you come contract, can you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'm looking here in my book to see if I can find a little quote from Danny on that. But every experience that we have is part of a master plan of what I call the whole organism. So that all the people you've ever interacted with in this life, every person you've ever met, even when you stop your car at a red light and a guy walks across the street in the crosswalk all the way down to your partners and your children, are all part of a large soul family.
Mm-hmm.
And soul families can often include 200 people who die on an airplane together or 100,000 people who die in a tsunami or an earthquake. These are all soul families who have agreements that we're going to come in and we're going to have a particular experience or set of experiences that's going to further this group in its evolution. So that is all, I don't want to say predetermined, but it's
mm-hmm.
kind of set up before incarnation. The way Danny's explained it to me is literally on the other side, in heaven, as he chooses to call it, you'll sit around in a conference almost with members of your soul family and they'll say, okay, well, we've come this far, we've done this and that, what are we going to do next? Maybe next time you'll come in as my disabled child and I'll come in as the alcoholic abusive father
mm-hmm.
and we'll live in a country where we're oppressed and tortured and we'll have all this stuff because this will teach each of us particular lessons that our souls are craving.
Right.
Now, once we come in and we're in these bodies, which are completely ruled by ego and physical density, it doesn't seem like such a good idea to be living in a war-torn country, you know, disabled and poverty-stricken. But the soul knows that it's exactly what it wants to further its growth. And so it is all kind of agreed to and planned. Danny says sometimes that, you know, planning an incarnation is like writing a movie script.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. And the quote that you were looking for, I think, is on page 36.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, Danny got it made right to it. And it says, the souls of every family choose one another equally. And the experience they share is a magnificent, perfect manifestation of the plan made by each soul for its growth. With each experience, everyone has a choice or a chance to transform habits, responses, behaviors, beliefs, and energy patterns. This is how the family groups are supposed to function, which is why there can no longer be such thing as a dysfunctional family. And I think that's why you choose the parents you choose and the sisters and siblings that you choose, rather than really the overall, now that I really read it. But still, that is very fitting for this, just you have to expand it a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I know that it's very possible to just smile on somebody down the street, and in many ways it is a contract for you to be there at that very moment and smile.
Yes.
And change a person in some way.
Well, I know that one of the reasons Danny chose me as his mother is because I'm a writer by profession. And part of the plan was that he would go through this life, this illness and this death, and start communicating through me, because I had the skill to publish a book.
Right.
And, you know, and there are many people who receive communications like this who've never
mm-hmm.
written a word in their lives, but it is part of their growth to come into doing that. I just found another thing. It's not in the book because it's going into the next book, where he talks about planning our incarnations is like writing a movie script. And he says, when we die, we carry the, quote, scars from traumatic experiences during our lives to heaven with us, because they're part of the work our souls are doing throughout their journey. But in heaven, we view these imprints without attachment,
mm-hmm.
as if we're reading a novel about characters and identify with those characters, but are not emotionally attached to them. It's like writing a script for a movie. We create the characters and their stories, and we sympathize with the characters. We feel their pain, care about the outcome, but we do it with a certain detachment, because our only goal is to produce an effective movie.
Right. And it's interesting you should say that, because it reminds me, when I was 13, I had a dream that lasted 30 days, and each day was a year of my life. And I thought it'd be a great movie.
Well,
and I did not realize it really was showing me metaphorically the lessons that I was going to go through, but it really did.
Yeah.
And it was an amazing thing, but literally it was like watching a movie.
Right. And you know, what the thing that's so really sad about a human existence is that, and I don't wish I knew the reason for this, but I guess I haven't gotten there yet, is in our particular culture and our religious upbringings, we have this idea that we are separate from the higher realm.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the biggest lie ever perpetrated, because heaven, the guides, the angels, the departed loved ones, everybody, the great teachers, are all hovering around us all the time. They're like 2 inches from our bodies here
mm-hmm.
on Earth. The room that you sit in right now is absolutely filled with beings and guides, because we were never meant to come to Earth and be alone and be abandoned.
Well,
go ahead.
No, go right ahead. I'm sorry.
Often say that it's like people who have children will understand this. When you take your toddler to preschool for the first time, and you leave this child alone in this strange
mm-hmm.
environment for the first time, and the kid is crying, and the teachers are there trying to comfort him, and you would never just leave him there and disappear. You know, the school knows how to get in touch with you if they need you, and it's part of the agreement that this child will be nurtured by these people in
mm-hmm.
your absence. And this is kind of how it is whenever we come to Earth. We come from the home or the bosom of our mother, father, creator to Earth school. And we're not meant to be separate. That mother, father, energy, guides, teachers, loved ones, whatever, is always around us, kind of prodding us and nurturing us and being there and communicating with us. And we're not alone here on Earth.
Mm-mm.
But most of the Judeo-Christian belief system has told us, yes, you are alone. Yes, God loves you, and God is there, but you're never really going to connect to it in this lifetime unless you're really good and you go to heaven. And if you're really bad, you'll go to hell, and you'll never connect to it anyway. So
right.
You're kind of doomed from the beginning.
Yeah, and it's like, why do you want to pay attention to that God? If it's throwing you down to be suffering and miserable.
And judging you.
And judging you. And it's just such the opposite. Human beings judge themselves harder than God could even think about. He wouldn't even think about it.
Right.
And it is truly amazing how powerful the human mind is to agree with letting somebody else separate them from what they innately know is something totally different.
And you really can't be separated from that.
No.
Separation is an illusion. And I ponder this all the time, is why in human evolution did we come up with this idea of separation and create this illusion? The whole story of the Garden of Eden is about the illusion of separation.
Right.
And it's not true, but somehow, and this drives me nuts because I haven't figured this out yet, you know, it's like somehow we labor under this misconception that we're separate. And why? Why did we come up with that? And the best thing I can come up with about that is that in order to fully experience the experience of being in a human body, I guess we have to feel separate.
We do tend to forget when we come down here the master plan.
Yes, we have to.
And
we remembered we'd never want to be here.
Well, and it's like, at least for me, I always saw angels since I was a kid, since I was a baby. I remember the first day coming home from the hospital and looking at the light and just being so drawn to the light and knowing that that's where I was supposed to be in the light and just focusing on it. So I feel very blessed that I think of people's memories being like a dimmer, and some people have it full on, or they gradually turn it on enough that the separation of actually being in physical form versus just the spiritual form, it's not such a shock that they slowly turn it on so they finally get a clue. But if we remembered how good it is on the other side, why would we want to be here?
Well, and that's so interesting because what you describe is exactly right, that it's funny because Danny told me once about a process that they go through before incarnation where they're actually erasing people's memories of their time in the non-physical. Because if you came back to Earth with those memories, as we all do as babies, as you did when you were born, and studies have even been done about this where you talk to a three-year-old and you say, where were you before you came here? And they'll tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Because they remember. But as you mature and then you're 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, you begin to forget, and you have to forget, because if you were 27 years old and you remembered, you wouldn't be able to function in society. And when you look at, you know, supposedly mentally ill homeless people walking around the streets mumbling to themselves and talking to God, they are just some of those people who didn't completely forget.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't really have their memories erased sufficiently, and so they're still connected there. And yet we call them sick and schizophrenic.
Well, they're also some of the most brilliant people around who, in my opinion, just, you know, they know too much.
Well,
so they just go to the other side and just stay there.
Right. And, I mean, you couldn't come to Earth with all that information and keep it, could you? I mean, it would be...
It almost would be overwhelming.
Yes. I mean, could you imagine, you know, like a 10-year-old with all that information in their consciousness? And there are children like that. There are psychic children. You were probably one of them. You know, gifted prodigies, people like, you know, Bach, you know, and these
geniuses,
and spiritual indigos, crystal children, retarded children, so-called. I mean, they're connected to another realm, and we look at them and we put them in a box, but they really are just more connected than we are. They're more in reality than we are.
And it's they really do. As a child, they really did not know how to handle me.
Yeah,
and it's interesting that you were mentioning earlier how you do come in and sometimes, given the task of doing something that you really didn't think you could do, it's like, I am a writer, I am a published poet, and yet growing up, I had to deal with learning disabilities and speech problems. And yet, now I'm on the radio.
Exactly. You know, here's a person with speech problems on a radio. Here's my son who couldn't talk.
Right.
Who has now written a book.
And it's amazing. It really has pushed me to appreciate my journey even more so.
Oh, that's perfect. That's just wonderful.
Because I really, you know, it's like, wow, I can check that off my list. That's really cool, you know?
Yeah, but you couldn't really get to the full appreciation of it without, you know, having the deprivation of it. And this is a really good segue into the topic of there are no accidents and no tragedies. So here's a child with a learning disability or a physical disability, and then you find out that that turns into somebody with a radio show who teaches awareness, or that turns into a child who writes a book from the other side. And everything is like that. There are no exceptions. So one of the things I try to teach in my workshops is something that Danny calls the gratitude channel, where you look at every single thing that happens. I don't care if you lose your job, you lose your legs, you lose your husband, you lose your house, whatever. Always, all you can say to the universe is, okay, this is interesting. I wonder what this means.
Right.
Show me why this is. Show me where this is leading me. But that's a pretty high way of looking at it. Most people are into victimization and blame, and I hate the bank, and I hate the government, and I hate, you know, my ex who took my money, or whatever the thing is. And it's never, ever about that. It's always about, wow, I figured this into my blueprint so that I could learn humility, or I could learn survival, or I could learn forgiveness, or whatever the thing happens to be. There's never, ever such thing as a tragedy.
Right. Or they're pushing you. You say you're going to do something, and you keep putting it off. So they take the thing that you're using as a distraction out of the way so you can't use it to make you do it.
Exactly. It's perfect.
That's what they're doing with me now.
Yes, and how could you not be grateful for that?
I am very grateful, and I knew there was a reason why everything was falling apart. And I knew that there was lessons here. And everybody around me is going, Sharon, what are you going to do? And I'm just going, move on and go on to the next thing.
You know what the answer is? I'm going to breathe.
Yeah. And you mentioned the breathing being very important in the book.
Yeah. Well,
speak a little bit more about the importance of breathing.
Well, of course we know with, you know, meditation and yoga and spiritual practices, that, you know, the prana or the breath is very important. But I got an insight into that with Danny dying, and now also as a hospice volunteer, I've really learned something. I'll see if I can find that in the book. When people die...
68.
I love it. Okay, I don't know if you have the same exact version of the book. You're talking about the breath mirror?
Right.
Yeah, okay. Well, when people die, when people are dying, and I don't mean when they get shot and they die violently, but when people are naturally dying, they breathe fewer respirations a minute. Normally we breathe like 20 respirations a minute or 40 or something. But when people are dying, they'll go down to 3. And I've asked Danny about that, and he says, well, breath on earth is translated into light in heaven. And there's this idea called the breath mirror. I don't think it's on 68, but...
Okay.
And he said, when somebody is dying and you watch them breathe, with every weakening breath on earth, it translates into a strengthening frequency of light in heaven. Because you're letting go of the physical connection on earth and moving into a new connection in another dimension. He says, what is breath on earth translates into light in heaven, which just makes perfect sense. I'll read to you what he says. He that he was talking about when he was dying, and he said, I could see the beauty of every human thought and action, and I felt a sadness for all the beauty and love that humans on earth aren't aware of. I was being counseled by angels to breathe into my passing, and with each breath I could let go with love. You once asked me about why people have fewer respirations as they die, and this is a good time to explain that. As my body was dying and my breaths were fading and infrequent, there was a mirror image of each breath in heaven, breathing in new life in much the same way a baby takes its first breath outside of the womb. With each weakening, struggling breath on earth, a mirror image breath occurs on the other side, getting stronger as each earth breath gets weaker, until the final breath closes one door and opens the other.
That's beautiful.
And then, so then when you start looking at meditation practices and the sacredness of the breath in yoga, it starts to make a lot of sense, because the breath is the bridge between the physical and the non-physical.
Mm-hmm.
Powerful stuff.
Very powerful. This book is just so awesome.
Thank you.
I just go through it and go, oh, wow. You were talking about meditation, and what's the difference between prayer, meditation, and manifestation?
Oh, well, there's no difference at all between prayer and meditation, as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
You know, so much of what we get hung up on is language. So in religion, a lot of us have really shunned the religion of our childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And so words like prayer make us run away screaming. And sometimes if we can just substitute those words with something else, instead of prayer, let's call it meditation. And then it doesn't seem so scary, and then it doesn't echo with all the church stuff that was pounded into our head as children. Another word is forgiveness. People don't understand forgiveness. They think it means condoning an action, and really what it means is releasing your attachment to that action. So it isn't forgiveness, it's releasing. It isn't prayer, it's meditation. And in order to manifest something, I heard somebody say this the other day, I don't know who originated this, but she said, worrying is like praying for something that you don't want. And it's because you're putting so much energy on, how am I going to pay this bill? How am I going to do this? How am I going to do this? That you're actually manifesting the difficulty by focusing
right
on it. So why couldn't you take that same energy and focus on manifesting what you want? But in order to do that, and this is one of the things that bothered me so much about the book and the movie The Secret, if they made it sound like you can just ask for a gold Cadillac and one will show up.
Yeah, and it seemed very greedy.
Yes.
They're promoting greed.
Well, and it's so not so much they're promoting greed, but they're not teaching manifestation the way it really is. You have to do your spiritual work in order to be a good manifester. And in order to do that, you have to heal. You have to get to forgiveness. You have to get to releasing. You have to open a conduit to be connected to the higher
mm-hmm.
realms. You can't just wish for a house and still be living in your ego. You have to do the work first. And they sort of skipped that part. You know, that's what the real secret is.
Right.
The real secret is you have to do the work and become a clear conduit. And once you become a clear conduit and realize, oh, you know what? Heaven is broadcasting to me all the time. It's always on, and I'm always connected to it. Once you realize that, then you can start manifesting.
Most definitely. And the work is the part. I mean, what does Danny say about the people or the human reality is they don't want to do the work. They don't want to know that they have a wound that they're just living in.
Right. Well, you know, and it's not even so much what Danny says about it, but it's that we're all evolved at different rungs on the ladder, right?
Right.
So, and, you know, you've probably experienced being with someone, being in love with someone, or having someone in your life who doesn't get it about that wound, or doesn't get it about relaxing and breathing and meditating and releasing and forgiving and all of that. And the biggest lesson I think we all have to learn in life is that we can't teach anybody anything. You know, we can only just be what we are and share what we have. And so if somebody isn't ready to get there's nothing we can do about it.
Right.
They're just, you know, you're on rung number 10 and on the ladder, and somebody else is on rung number 2, and you can't speed up their process.
Right. Terry, I think we have a caller. Do we have a caller?
Sure enough.
Caller, I can barely hear you.
Hello.
Hello. Is this Chris?
No, this is Jeannie.
Hi, Jeannie. How can I'm really having a hard time hearing you.
Okay, I'll talk even louder.
I would appreciate it. What's your question?
Well, I'm really enjoying this show. I've just read Michael Newton, Journey of the Soul, and he talks about similar stuff of the soul families.
Excellent.
Are you familiar with him?
I personally am not.
I'm not either.
Oh, yeah, I guess he did hypnosis and people started going to lives in between lives. But my question, I had a question. Do you mind?
Do you mind, Terry?
Okay. I've been told that I knew somebody in 5 different lifetimes, even off this planet, this person that was in my life, that was just a really negative influence on my life, but I learned a lot from it. And I'm just wondering why I would 5 times be involved with someone that killed me 4 out of 5 times and nearly killed me this lifetime. And I feel a lot of love for this person.
Well, you've probably been with this person a lot more than 5 lifetimes, first
mm-hmm.
of all. And the greatest teachers we have are the ones who force us into the deepest lessons.
Yes.
So, in fact, in my book, a big part of my story is, you know, the abusive marriage I was in while my son was ill and dying. And part of my process of forgiving was learning that this person was my greatest teacher, and he was a creation of mine, as this person is for you. This is a co-creation of your higher self and your guides and the energy, you know, that fuels everything that we could call God. It's like your soul said, who can I create that will teach me the most?
Right. I get all that.
Yeah.
But I don't get that he's so mean to me, and yet I still love him so much. Is that like on a soul level? Because I can stay away from him now, but I still love him, but I stay away from him.
Of course it's on a soul level. Everything is on a soul level.
So that's my soul who really loves him, but my personality knows I need to stay away from him.
Well, your personality is going through the growth process. And sometimes people come into our lives as teachers, and sometimes the only lesson they're supposed to teach us is how to have boundaries and how to stay away from people like that.
And how to love myself enough not to be around somebody like that.
Absolutely. So that may be the main thing that he's teaching you.
Yeah.
There's probably a lot more to it than that.
That was mainly it, for sure. It's just confusing to be staying away from somebody that I love so much. You know what I mean?
Well, and the other part about that, though, is releasing somebody to their past. Because when you're in a relationship like that, you want to control it, whether you like to think that about yourself or not. You want him to be a certain way. You want certain things to happen. And the other big lesson is you can't do that.
Right.
He's on his own path, and you have to let it go completely.
Totally, totally, totally. Just, you know how confusing it is to love somebody and yet know they cannot be in your life? That's just so confusing to me.
Well, what that's really about is, if you were saying that in different words that was more honest, it would be more like, to love somebody and they won't do what you want them to do.
They won't be who I want them to
be. They won't do what you want them to do.
Yeah.
That's what that really is.
I'll have to read your book. I totally resonate with everything you two are talking about. Thank you.
Well, just to remind you, the website is swaninheaven.com.
Okay.
And you can get the book there.
Terrific. I noticed that on your webpage.
So it is some wonderful information there. I mean, you just open the book every day and you can find something else just to remind you of who and what you are and why you're here. And it's just a wonderful. Now, Terry, you are saying that there's going to be another book?
There is another book in progress at the moment. It doesn't even have a title at this time, but it's going to be based on stuff that I've learned as I've gone out and given lectures and done mm-hmm. workshops with Danny. When I go out and teach, and even when I do interviews like this, Danny is always talking through me.
Aww.
But, you know, I became a hospice worker after he died and did a lot of study and a lot of work about death processes.
Mm-hmm.
I was involved in, oh, I still am involved in something called the Anamkara Project, which is mm-hmm. an ancient Celtic practice of being what they call a soul friend to the dying. And my next book is going to be, it's still going to be channeled, of course, because I have learned that there's really nothing I can do in this life by myself, that Danny and my guides are always doing it with me. But it's going to focus a lot on changing the way we look at death.
Mm-hmm.
I was visiting a psychologist friend of mine in Seattle recently, and she said to me, you know, I think the fear of death is the cause of all human neurosis. And I don't mm-hmm. mean the fear of physical death, but it's the ego's fear of losing control. It's the fear of what will become of me if I'm not here anymore.
Right. I totally agree with that.
Yeah, and I never even thought about it until she said it to me, and I thought, you know, that's the cause of everybody trying to control everything, of violence, aggression, manipulation, all the ego stuff we do because the ego is afraid of extinction. And so that's when I started thinking about this new book, and it's all about what if we could heal that by realizing that we can never be extinct, that there is no death, that we don't go away. We just vibrate on another frequency, and that everything we do continues. The work continues, the love continues, and that we don't really go away. Couldn't that potentially give us so much peace that we wouldn't have to be so neurotic? So that's kind of the premise of the book. There's a man that I work with whose 16-year-old son got hit by a train.
Mm.
And this man says to me, well, my son was so talented and brilliant, and he was an actor and a writer, and he could have been so many things, and his life is wasted. And I say to him, no, his life is still going on.
Mm-hmm.
Everything he was and everything he came to Earth to do, he's still doing.
Mm-hmm.
He's just doing it in a different form. So imagine if people could start to see it that way, how different the grieving process would be and how healed people would be.
Mm-hmm. It would definitely make a huge difference.
Yeah.
I'll let you go.
Well, thank you very much.
Bye,
for calling in. I appreciate you listening.
Yes, thank you for your show.
Thank you.
Good night.
Night.
Bye.
Do you think that, I mean, the other thing that I get that is a big fear is failure and success, and yet they're always successful.
Right. Yes, because there can't be any failure. So, you know, it's funny. I have a friend who does readings. She's an amazing channeler, and I refer many, many people to her. She's discussed throughout my book, Rebecca Covington.
Mm-hmm.
And she, can I plug her website, RebeccaCovington.com? I have to say
please.
That. But somebody did a reading with her the other day who started a business, and they asked, will my business be successful? Well, from a soul perspective, your business will be successful even if it goes broke. Because what's the definition of success? From a soul point of view, success is that your soul learns its planned lessons.
Right.
And so your business failing will give you that lesson. So in that sense, yes, your business will be successful. So if somebody's having a reading with a psychic, it's always good to be very specific. You know,
yes, they should have asked, will my business be financially successful?
Exactly, right, yeah. Will my business make money? That's really what they wanted.
Right.
You know?
Well, we do have another caller, Terry.
Oh, good.
Hello, caller.
Yes, hi. I'm calling from Canada. My name's Noelle.
Hello, Noelle. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. It's an interesting topic. Not to put a bad spin on this, but I was just curious about suicides because we've been affected by a few people that we know. And what happens to those souls? And I don't think they're punished or anything like that, but I just wondered, you know, because most of us, you know, are taught that's a no-no.
Right.
And so we always wonder how the soul progresses, or if that was something that was planned when they came into this life. Or
thank
so,
you for thank you for that.
I'll get off the air and listen to what you have to say.
Well, you have to get off the air, but
okay.
That's such a wonderful question. I love getting that question. Suicide is planned. But everything has free will. So here's the reason why people commit suicide. People get to a place where they become so steeped in the illusion of separation that they really feel that there is no connection left. There is no love. There is no support. That everything has just shut off. The conduit to the higher realms, to your guides, to your loved ones, to angels, whatever, feel truly separate. And the only sin, if you would use that word, of suicide is the belief in the illusion of separateness.
Okay.
But when you die and you get to the other side, there's only healing. Only healing. There's never, ever punishment. Punishment is one of the most destructive, untrue concepts that was ever created in I don't even want to say spiritual teachings, because it's not spiritual.
Mm-mm.
You know,
I believe that too. I don't think that. I think forgiveness is there and love is there, and I think it's an earth, sort of an earthly thought, 3D thought about the punishment as a control mechanism, or I don't know. But I don't agree with that either. I think our God is loving and has a place for everyone.
Well, the energy that we call God is love.
Mm-hmm.
And because there's no separation between us and it, it can never judge us. It's like your right hand judging your left hand.
That's right. That's right.
Because in order to judge something, you have to be separate from it. You have to step back and look at it and say, well, I don't approve of you.
What would you say to people, like, one of them was an 18-year-old who hung himself, and his mother and father had, of course, a terrible time with it, and then they lost another son in an accident, and they only had 3 sons. So it was sort of like within a 2-year period she lost 2 children out of 3 who were early 20s, just late teens, and she's pretty spiritual, but I think she feels some kind of blame and, you know, I should have seen it, that kind of stuff. And you don't know what to say to people like that.
There's nothing you can say. As mothers, we're going to feel guilt no matter what, so we may as well just accept that, you know.
Yeah,
I feel terrible guilt about the dumbest things, you know.
But it's really, it's forgive yourself, forgive them, and just let them go. But we're still connected.
Well, you can't, you know, you don't even have to let them go because they haven't gone anywhere.
No, I meant, you know, the longing for them to be here, this sort of thing holding them. Like, I don't think they made a connection with that yet, you know? They think there's still a separation there because of what happened.
Well, and so, you know, in our culture, everybody thinks that, and that's really sad because we come from a culture where we've been taught that there is a separation, that we're over here and God is over there, and we can't get there.
Yes.
And,
yeah,
of course,
and once that realization is, we've always had him here.
Right.
It's so nice. It's a nice realization. And
it is very peaceful and comforting, isn't it?
But I think you're right. I think everyone has to do it in their own time, in their own way, because it's a knowing more than a telling.
Yes.
You know, it's an inner knowing. It's a feeling you get which comforts you. You know, it's like, we miss them. We can't touch them. Well, we may be able to feel them if you're sensitive enough. But it's that human side, you know. That's the hard part of letting go, I
think. It is very hard to miss a physical presence.
Yes.
A physical body. And that's all the more reason why people need to learn that there's so much more than that physical body.
Exactly.
I mean, for me, the connection and the communication I have with my son now is so much more than what I had with him in the body.
It probably feels more real.
It is more real.
Yeah.
And, you know, because it's not 3D. Have you read the Matthew books?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay, because they use the expression 3D.
But I I'm interested in it, though.
So. Matthewbooks.com.
Okay.
I'm always
wonderful.
Plugging all my friends.
Yes, well, and that's a wonderful website.
Yeah.
Well, another one to put on my list. I've got a favorites list on my computer that's getting bigger and bigger. But thank you for all your information, and I really appreciate that. And
thank you. Thank you for calling.
Okay,
thank you, Nicole,
you.
For listening. I really appreciate you calling in.
Oh, thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. So with Danny and all the communications, is he really trying to kind of wake people up to the misconceptions that humans have been passing down time and time again? Like many other of the spiritual teachers that are down here, because you say in the book that a lot of what you say is being said by other people, yet you're saying it in a different way.
Well, yes, he's trying to teach the same thing that they're all teaching, because there really is only one truth, you know, and the one truth is there's love and forgiveness, not punishment and judgment, you know.
Right.
And so everybody's saying that. And Danny's particular thing, and this is in my book, you know, when Danny was sick and dying, I was in an abusive marriage. And when I started writing the book, I kept getting this feeling that I was supposed to write in detail about my marriage. And I thought, no, I don't want to write that kind of book. I don't want to write some soap opera kind of book. But I kept getting the message from my guides, no, you have to use this story as a context for this teaching. So I think Danny, perhaps what sets his teaching apart from so many of the others, is he's focusing on a particular aspect of human experience as an illustration of these teachings, at least in this book he is, you know, about relationships and about, like the other caller who said, well, I'm engaged in this ongoing drama with somebody and I can't let go of it. And so Danny's trying to teach us, through his experience as a child in the middle of a chaotic relationship, about allowing each person to be on their path and releasing them to that path. And, boy, is that the hardest thing in the world to do, you know? But like he said in that thing that you quoted about dysfunctional families, there can
right.
be no such thing as a dysfunctional relationship, because each soul planned this, like, okay, we're going to meet here in 1995, and we're going to have this family, and it's going to be like this, and this person's going to be sick, and this person's going to be addicted, and this person's going to be abusive, and here's what we're going to do. Because
right.
it's a perfect plan to further this little soul group.
And it's very interesting. I have been very, very blessed with, because of the awareness that I do have, if I meet someone and as I tell everybody I meet, if somebody irritates you, they're only reflecting something you don't want to see in yourself.
Or
in some way.
Yeah, and but, you know, I think people even misunderstand that, because it's like, you know how you've had friends and they've had one bad relationship after another, and you
right.
say, well, you keep attracting men like that. When you say something like that, it almost sounds critical and derogatory to say, well, you keep attracting drugs
right.
or whatever. And so, again, it comes down to language. And so instead of saying it in that language, which sounds critical, we would say instead something like, well, you know, you're attracting some really powerful teachers who are
right.
trying to show you something that you need to see. And once you can recognize them as that, then you can release your attachment to their behaviors
right.
and to the outcomes that you hope. But it's very hard to do it when you're in the middle of it, and sometimes you have to go through the misery, and the relationship has to end, and
mm-hmm.
it's a lot of misery. I mean, human life is not bliss.
The other thing that I've recognized is one thing we're down here to experience is the emotions.
Yeah.
It's the length that we decide to hold on to it that we need to really discover that, you know, if we feel like we need to cry, it's okay to cry. Just don't hold on it and make it an excuse and and make it your entire life, it's, if you need to cry, cry, release it, and let it go, because that's what tears are for.
Yeah.
Is a releasing practice.
Oh, that's so true. You know, I saw Carolyn Mace speak last summer, and she said something so amazing. She said, here's why people don't heal. And she told a story about she was somewhere at a conference with a bunch of people she didn't know, she had just met, and they were all, a bunch of people had gone to dinner together or something, and somebody said, hey, why don't we get together next Tuesday and have dinner again? And everyone started looking at their calendars, and one woman said, well, I can't come on Tuesday because I have my sexual abuse survivors meeting on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And it just stunned the table into silence. And they all said, well, okay, I guess you can't make it on Tuesday. And so later, Carolyn took this woman aside and said, this is why you're not healing, because you find it so necessary to broadcast that to a table full of strangers who don't know you. All you had to do was say, I can't make it on Tuesday. You didn't have to give that extra piece of information, waving a flag, I'm a sexual abuse survivor.
Right.
But because you feel the need to wave that flag everywhere you go, you're so attached to that definition of yourself that no wonder you're not healing from this. So it really is about not carrying those definitions around with us all the
right.
time. So we don't walk around saying, I was in an abusive relationship. We say, I was in a relationship with the most powerful teacher I ever had.
Right.
It's a very different way of looking at things.
Yes, and I do want to say, because believe it or not, our time is just about up. I do want to remind people to go check out Terry Daniels' book that was written with her son, Danny, at swaninheaven.com. Wonderful book, awesome information, very powerful, very empowering and insightful. And I do want to thank you, Terry, very much, and please come back on the show again with your next book, or if you want to continue talking about this one, because there's so much more information on here that we really can discuss and enlighten other people with the information and get this book more out there.
Thank you. I'd love to do that.
That'd be awesome. So this is Jennifer Hillman. And if you'd like to get more information about me, please check out my website, which is angelsintuition.com. If you would like a reading, please, there's a way to get a reading from me. Check out Terry's website again at theswaninheaven.com. And until then, with each breath of air, we hope you gain new insights and inspirations. Until next time, many blessings and good night.